season 3 of So Tong Sessions. Woo! Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. You're on with
Candace,
Delia,
and Jazz
for another virtual episode where we talk about all things life, love, and legacy. So we're gonna kick off season 3. We missed y'all the past couple of months since season 2 ended. We just wanna catch up a little bit. Y'all wanna just catch up with us a little bit?
We need that.
What have y'all been doing for the last, 3 months has it been?
I can't believe it's been 3 months already. That went by kind of fast, low key.
It did, all things considering. Although I need 2020 to get on out of here.
She got to go. It's mid-November right now. Like, I don't understand where the time went. But I think Candace, Miss International, should go with her update first because, I'm dying to know what happened down in Mexico.
Yes, girl.
Oh, my goodness.
Last time we saw you with the background and the pool, tell us what you've been doing.
More of that. 3 months of that. Beaches in the background. Mexico, so just to be a little bit more specific, I was in Cozumel, which is an island in the Mexican Caribbean. So it doesn't have that full-on Mexico vibe. It's more like island life. I was there for 3 months. By the beginning of the third month, most of the people I ran into knew me. Who was like, hey, Candace. Because there aren't that many black girls walking around. The island was still on quarantine, kind of. And it was really hard for people to get to Mexico, right? So the resort I stayed at, there was 35 people at the resort total. And I was the only black person there the first few times I went to that resort. I went over the course of 2 months. So by the end of it, everybody knew my name. And then the people who worked at the resort lived in the city. So then when I relocated to the city for the third month, it was like, oh, Miss Candace, what you doing down here? It was very neighborly. An island will do that. So you got to be nice to everybody, treat everybody good, tip well, because it's small and word gets around. So but I was either Candace or Bonita. I became Bonita real quick.
Ooh, Bonita. How did a couple weeks turn into so many months? Because last we heard from you, you were like, okay, I'm going for a couple weeks. Next thing you know, Candace, where you at? I'm still down here.
I had to be led to come back, let me tell you. And every 30 days, I would check in with the Lord and be like, you ready? Because I ain't ready. And that was basically how it went. At the end of the second month, the verdict for Breonna Taylor came out on that whole case. And my heart, I was in a state of actual grief for a week. And so I didn't want to return with the heaviness that I left with. I was like, I'm gonna stay, work out my salvation until I feel healthy and strong. And so I think that whole trip, to be honest, was just about mental health. And for me, deciding who I wanted to be in 2021, who I did not want to be anymore. Because Jasmine told me, she said, take some time. I said, I'm going to take my time right here on this beach. And when I know.
Place. That's the perfect.
It really is.
Work out some things.
Yeah. So once I felt like I knew what I wanted to be next, who I wanted to be and how I wanted to get there, I didn't have all the details in place, but I knew I was strong enough to become that person. I knew that being back in America, it terrified me. I went through this process where I felt like I could get shot while I'm sleeping. I had a real fear. I was having nightmares that someone broke into my house and killed me in my sleep. Yeah. Or that I would get shot driving and I wouldn't have the opportunity to plead my case to the police and say, hey, actually, here are my credentials. My life is valuable. Mm-hmm. That fear was so real. So for me, I had to work through that and then get to a point to say, maybe America might kill me, but I'm ready now to kind of face that fear and take my chances. Mm-hmm. And then on my flight in the airport on the way back, I got an email from AmeriCorps and they offered me a position. Then I knew how I was going to serve and what I was coming back into. Well, he do it. The Lord will answer you, girl.
On the flight back home.
On the flight back home. So when I decided, okay, it's time for me to go, I didn't have any plan. I just knew. And then, on the flight home, I knew what my job was going to be. Dang. So I'm hoping like I'm back healthier than ever, but we gonna find out this season 3 because I don't know the truth gonna come out.
You look the part though. You look sun-kissed and glowing, and you
got worked on that.
Something new.
Even practiced in the mirror for that.
So where are you located now?
So I'm back in Missouri. I'm in the suburbs of St. Louis, I guess is the better way to say that. Yeah. Down the street from my mama, we had to not be in the same house, but be near each other.
Close by.
Close by. So I have coffee with her on my lunch breaks and living my best life. That's trying to.
How do you feel quarantine is different where you were in Cosmo to here?
Girl, let me tell you about the lack of foolery that made life so much more pleasant. Like, it's Mexico, okay? And so people were like, when I told people, they're like, ooh, you better be careful down there. You might catch something. I was like, I felt more likely to catch something on an airplane or in the hotel because I quarantined when I came back than I did in the whole island. Like, everyone was masking to walk down the street. There was a curfew. There was a liquor curfew as well. Everywhere you went, if you went to the liquor store, they took your temperature. I went to the ribbon shop to buy ribbons, like for your hair ribbons. She was like, oh, hold on, let me take your temperature. Like, nobody was playing games. And so I felt very secure, number one. But two, you develop the habit of protecting yourself. So because you have to wear a mask every time you leave your front door, not when you get in your car or any of that, there was no opportunity to forget it. So when I came back here, like, I was just constantly masked up, like, all the time. And I realized, like, how that's still a hard thing for a lot of people.
For some. Yeah.
Craziness. Craziness. Jazz, how about you? What's been happening?
A lot of the same. Nothing super new. I ain't travel nowhere. Ain't have no beachfront property going on, you know. But yeah, it's been quarantine as usual, working. My self-care includes a lot of TV, a lot of Family Feud.
That's real.
But,
and valid.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was my mom's 60th birthday actually last month, about a month ago.
Oh, so, hey, mom. Okay.
It was so exciting. So I threw a surprise birthday party for her, and we had like all the siblings were there. My uncle came up from Florida. It was just really cute, really festive. A lot of the family was just there to celebrate. And that was the first time we had all gotten together since Corona. Yeah. And I think even since we got married, like, that was our first trip back to VA.
Wow.
So it was good just to see everybody. My parents were in their new forever home, so they were super hyped to like show us around. It was really nice. So that happened. That was last month.
I'm really curious, how does their new forever home differ from like the home with the family in it? Like, can you tell that they view themselves very differently now? Like, is it obvious that
they live in their best life?
Yeah.
To the max. Like, I love it. I'm so happy for them. Like, they're finally at that place where they got everything that they wanted in their home. Like, they went all out. Luxuries, like, they made it comfortable for themselves, and they deserve it after, you know what I mean, like a whole career, a whole lifetime of working to, like, you know, have themselves in that situation. So it's definitely like, as their kids going to their home is like, dang, like, y'all living it up. Okay, they got the little pool in the backyard.
Oh, wow.
They're super hyped. So we're definitely happy for them that they're like at that stage in life where they can really like enjoy, and then they have flexibility with their schedules. Like, they can do what they want when they want. So yeah, it was cool.
Nice.
Cool.
That's awesome. So, yeah. Have you been with quarantine and stuff kind of reopening again? Do you feel like you've gone out a little bit more? Do you feel like you've still been kind of like, I'm staying home?
Yep, we've been home. Definitely. And then in the month, when was it? Quarantine be running together. I think it was in September, I had my wisdom teeth taken out, all four.
At the same time?
At the same time. So
my gosh.
I was already in the house before, but that took me down for like a week at least. I was like, out of it.
What did you eat? Soup?
Mashed potatoes?
Just drinking Ensure. Oh my God.
Not Ensure. Ensure. Stop it.
Why at the same time though, Jazz? You know we could go back.
No, why would you want to do that again? No, I was
what happened.
I did mine in two shifts or whatever.
Right. So did I.
Actually, it was fun. Like the day before, maybe like the week before the surgery, I was in more pain than I was after the surgery. It was just like I was just like, get them all done.
They had to go. You kind of gangster like that though. Like, let's get this done. I'm like, oh, do we have to? Just do a half or tooth at a time. Like I'll come back. Mama don't like pain.
We'll do a series of this. Like,
let's drag this out. You were probably looking like a little chipmunk, though. I can imagine just crossed up.
They wheeled me to the car, and he looked at me, and he busted out laughing. He was like, your little cheeks.
Yeah, we have to go. He had to be wheeled into the car.
Yeah, I went under. I told them to put me under. I was like, I'm getting all four of these. I was like, put me under. That was the first time I've ever been under like complete anesthesia in my life, and it was worth it.
That little detail was necessary.
Yeah.
Because if you could put me under, like knock me out, you can do everything. I would go for it. But like, with the little shot,
she's like, you're gonna start to feel a little bit hungover, you know, like the room is spinning. And I was like, oh, okay. Next thing I know, they was waking me up, talking about, Jasmine, come on, it's time to go. I was like, oh, bet, let's go.
It feels like no time has passed. It really does. Right.
I was like, can we do this for more? Like, can we have children this way? Like, if I, you know, if I want to deliver a baby under conditions, can we make that happen?
I wake up with a baby on my chest like, hey. That's funny. Well, I'm glad you're no longer in any pain and you got all that taken care of.
Yes. But Dee, how about you, girl? Update us.
Wow, what's been going on? So I got a new job. I moved into a new apartment. So it's been a lot. It's been a lot of changes these last couple months. I am teaching fourth grade at a school here in DC. My students are so cute. They're amazing. They're frustrating, but I love them. And we're all virtual right now. So everything is via Zoom call, which is hard because you just want to like love on them and build those relationships. And that's kind of difficult to do sometimes via Zoom, you know, via a Zoom call. Mm-hmm. But the kids are, I mean, they're doing the very best they can. They also miss one another and like want to play with each other and hang out, and they don't have that. There's no recess. There's no social time. Like, it's really hard for them. So I'm very proud of my students and how they've been doing. And I love that I've gotten a chance to jump back into the classroom and be able to support the kids at this time, because it's hard. It's really, really hard. So when I got the opportunity to jump into this school, I was like, I'll take it. I'll do it. Let me support. Let me help the babies. Let me do this. So that's been really good. I, like I said, moved into my own place. Y'all know me. Y'all know how particular I am about things. Y'all know how I like my personal space. The first thing I did was wash out my tub and take a bath. Like, it was just fantastic. And so I really enjoy it. It makes me feel so much less stressed to know that I can come home to a peaceful environment. That's mine, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's been really great. I also got a chance to do a fun like theater festival, which is kind of cool. It's actually premiering right now. We'll put the link in the bio. Yeah. but it's funny because with theater being shut down, everybody's been trying to figure out how we're still going to do this. How are we still going to get art out there? How are we still going to have influence in that sphere, right? And so this community theater here in DC, they decided to film it instead of being on stage. And so they're doing like a YouTube live event with the plays that we filmed. And so everybody's just trying to figure out how to deal with COVID and how to still, one, make money, but then also still put out, you know, content. Yeah. I saw Broadway's been doing a lot of things where they're doing like staged readings as well, where they film each actor kind of together or separately. And then they're, you know, they're selling tickets for like five, $5 or $10 to like $50. It's kind of what you want to donate. And then you can buy a ticket, they send you a link, and you have 48 hours to watch the show. So that's been really cool to be able to see it. I just saw one that Felicia Rashad, who was like my idol, she just directed one. And so it was just really fun to be able to like, okay, we're making this work. We're doing it. We're coming back in some way, shape, or form. So that's
so it's premiering tonight. When did you guys actually shoot it?
We filmed this about a month ago.
Oh, okay. Actually.
Yeah, we were supposed to do it back in April, but then everything got shut down. Mm-hmm. And so we filmed back in October. And very much social distanced from everyone. There was only a small group of people in the theater each time. There was tons of sanitary wipes and hand sanitizer. Everybody wore a mask until we were filming, and then the masks came off. We filmed, and then they went back on, and everybody had their felt really safe. It felt really safe, so that was good.
How do you feel like? Do you think that's sustainable with so many productions and even like movie productions as well as Broadway having to go through such lengths to even film something? Do you think that that's something that they can actually sustain throughout the winter and even into the spring, or is it just too much work?
I think it's going to be really hard for smaller theaters to be able to sustain. I think that for the bigger studios, like we know a lot of our fall TV shows have come back, yes.
Grey's Anatomy coming back tonight, so I'm watching.
So I know like these big name theaters, they kind of have the money, to be able to make things happen for themselves on a larger scale. But a lot of these small theaters don't have that. They need the donations. They need people to buy the tickets. Even if all you have is $10, they need that to come, to continue to come in so that they can continue to support the arts in their communities. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really difficult for theaters to keep this going long-term if they don't get that kind of support. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to just kind of see, but I think it's going to be hard long-term if we have to kind of continue doing this, which hopefully we won't have to too much longer. I think there's
a busy 90 days. Like, that's both a lot to do in 90 days.
Both of y'all had some life-changing things happen.
Girl, I just had to find a location and sit before the Lord. This one got a new job, did theater, got a house, took a bath. I mean, wow.
I've taken several. My But I think it happened very quickly. Like everything in those 3 months happened very quickly. Even when I moved, I actually wasn't supposed to move for another 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up just kind of asking if they had something available. And they were like, yeah, we have something available this weekend. And I was like, great, I'll take it.
Set it up.
And I moved in like 3 days. So it happened very, very fast. So it's been a blessing. I'm very happy.
Let me ask you something about that, because I remember when Jasmine moved back to the States, your whole life changed very quickly as well. I'm not asking, I'm telling, because I was there, I know. And I'm like, because it was like this, like, okay, you meet somebody, you're like, oh, this is going to be the one, we doing this and all. Like, there's a process though, right? Like, did you sew into it? Was it something that you felt like you've been praying about for a while and wondering if this kind of freedom and breakthrough was going to come through? And then it happens fast.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been home in the States for 2 years now. So it's been about 2 years. It's been 2 years since I've been home. Mm-hmm. And those first 2 years were very much like, I didn't really know what I was gonna do. I didn't really know what direction I was gonna go in. I really didn't know where I was gonna land. And then I got hurt and I kind of had to sit down for like 6 months. And so that really forced me to kind of think about some things and really focus on what was going on. And then just as I was kind of starting to put some pep in my step and like literally get back on my feet, COVID happened and that shut everything down. And I think, especially with this job that I have now, it's been really great because I wasn't at the point last year where I could have applied for a full-time teaching position last year. I wasn't even able to stand up on my feet for more than 20 minutes at a time.
Wow.
Like I would go into the school to substitute and come home and my ankle was like the size of like a tennis ball every single day that I went out. And I was like, there's no way I can be a teacher on this foot. Like, it's just not, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready physically. I also wasn't ready emotionally. Mm-hmm. So it's taken a lot of time for me to really kind of process what I wanted and where I felt like the Lord was leading me, and then being also able to just kind of hear it. Mm-hmm. And so I kid you not, literally it was like, I had a conversation with the Lord, and then I saw a posting for a job, I made a phone call, I had an interview, and I got hired all within a week.
Like that conversation with the Lord, though. That's how you got to start right there. The Lord.
He was just waiting. It was like he was just waiting, you know, right, to be like, okay, babe, here's your blessing. Mm-hmm. And then I remember telling my dad, as soon as I told my dad I got the job, he was like, great, now you can move. We can get you on now. Like it was just the way it all kind of set up. But it did happen very quickly, but there was a lot of praying. There was a lot of tears. There was a lot of frustration that went into that, which I'm sure, you know, we've all been there.
Right. I just wanted to put that into perspective, because I know we talked about, especially with Jazz, like how quickly it happened. And I'm in the airport, and now when I come home, I got a job that I haven't worked in this country for anybody in over a decade, maybe two decades. Mm-hmm. But there's like that period that you take that time before and wrestle with yourself. Mm-hmm. And wrestle with the Lord. And I think Jazz spoke to that in season two. And that's a real thing. And once you come to terms with like, okay, this is what I want. This is the demand I'm putting on the Lord and myself.
It happened. Yep.
It's amazing. It really is. I remember, Candace, you and I having a conversation about stuff just in Korea and like direction and where to go. And mm-hmm. I'll never forget, you told me, you were like, why can't you do both? Why do you think
that conversation
wants to do both? And I was like, I don't know, you know, like it took, and even from that conversation, it still took me several years to kind of walk that process out for myself, mm-hmm. you know, and to feel confident in who I was on both ends of the spectrum and be like, no, I'm a great teacher and I love teaching. That's cool. I'm a performer and I love performing and that's cool.
And I don't have to. Performer.
Yes. And I don't have to choose.
Plays. We remember.
I don't have to choose one side of me. I can be all of who I am.
Yes. You
know? And that took time, even from your conversation.
Girl, what? Ooh. That's that right there.
That's silly.
You can be all of you. I don't know who makes more justification for the amount of talents we've been given than Black women. Like, mm-hmm. we have a skill in a certain area. But we have an anointing and a gift in other areas, and we always feel like, got to do the thing that I'm skilled at doing. And we tend to have to make that choice. Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that conversation. We were sitting at a table, it was made of wood.
Yes. Why? Because you wanted to flip it?
Because I remember staring at it, like trying to understand what she was saying. And in my mind, I was like, God has given multiple talents, and we are obligated. It's not optional. Obligated to steward. If he give you one, then you steward that one. If he give you 10, you steward that 10. And I mean, we got Kamala now, so you understand how that look in the real world.
Hey, when you have strong support and strong women who support you, strong men who support you, yes. you realize your identity, like God shows you who you are through those people, right? Yes. So it wouldn't have been easy for me to walk that out if I didn't have that conversation with you, if I didn't have conversations that I had with Jazz and with other people that I'm, you know, that are intimate to me. It wouldn't have been as easy. Mm-hmm. It would have been a lot harder maybe for myself to kind of get through my insecurities and my fears and walk that out if I wasn't having those conversations with the people that God put in my life, mm-hmm. you know? And so we see these examples of our intimate friendships and our family, and then we're now seeing these examples played out on the larger scale in our country. And it's like, yo, what are young women are going to be able to grow up believing for themselves now? Mm-hmm. Y'all not ready. We are not ready for Black women to be able to be place. I'm trying. Look, y'all not ready.
The audacity to become, game changer.
That's a book. That's a book. That's yeah. like both of the Obama's books mixed together. Yes, I love it.
Welcome, Obama's. Call me if you need that forward done.
I love it.
I could write a preface. Yeah.
Come on now. Welcome to our season 3 premiere. You are still on with
Candace,
Delia,
and Jazz.
for another part of our virtual episode where we talk about all things life, love, and legacy. So we just got y'all caught up on how we've been doing these past couple of months. We're going to kind of take a step outside of our homes and talk about what's been going on in the country and in the world, because it's been a lot even within the past 3 months. So ladies, let's just start talking about what we want to talk about.
Do it.
Can we just talk about Kamala for a moment?
Let's.
You know what? I know for me, one of the first times I saw Cicely Tyson and Whoopi Goldberg was groundbreaking for me as a performer. To see Black women portrayed in the media killing their work and their craft, right? I can't imagine what this is going to do. Like, I'm so excited about what this is going to do for our little girls and boys. Like, I'm so excited. So I cannot wait to see like how the next generation, I mean, when my little brother saw Miles Morales and Spider-Man, it was like a whole new thing came out for him. You know what I mean? And so now we get this on an even larger scale in terms of the impact that she could have and the policies that she can put forward. Like, I do have high expectations. I'm gonna say that up front. I have high expectations. I wanna see some things. But I'm glad that we're seeing already. I'll just start there.
Jazz, what you think?
There's a lot to unpack. But just thinking about like what Dee is saying, like in our lifetime, we've had a Black president and now a female vice president who is also a person of color. Like, what? That's amazing. And like you're saying, like for the next generation, like there are kids who are young and being born right now who this is what their introduction into American society is gonna be.
This is gonna be their normal.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, it's inspiring. It's finally like, man, we're now becoming the face. After being behind the scenes for so long, historically Black women always being behind the curtain and doing the hard work and then other people getting the credit for it, it's finally like, okay, here we are. Like, we're on the stage now. It's our time right now. And that feels good. It feels good to be seen.
That's a good sentence.
Yeah.
Feels good to be.
How do you feel about it all?
I mean, I'm a very cautious optimist when it comes to American politics in general. Because that pendulum does not favor the middle. It's always, at least in 2020, it go one extreme to the other. And so I'm very cautious. I do appreciate what it means representation-wise. Like, it had to be broken, and she broke a lot in one fell swoop. Just with the diversity of colors that she represents alone, right? Like, first Asian, first African-American. Like, it's a lot going on there. I don't know how this is going to come across, but I really am excited to see a husband have to, or get to, I guess, take that subservient role, right? So when you got the vice president, there's a wall of vice presidents and their wives, and they call them like Madam Vice President, or wait, and then what do they call like the wife? Whatever, the wife of. It's always the wife of, the wife of, the wife of. And now there's this man who, like, I read that he quit his job because of this, her pursuing this, to support her in this endeavor. And I think what we talked about in our warm-up episode is how important someone saying, hey, you can do this. Hey, this is what you carry. This is actually who you are. And it must be done by you. How important that is to getting people to stand in their truth. Like, I saw that and I could not ignore the fact that she stood there. Something had to happen for her to stand there. That you don't stand in greatness alone. And there has to be that voice that counteracts, especially as a Black woman, to be the first. Can you imagine all the things she heard in her own head because of all the things that she heard in real life? Like, I'm currently reading Stacey Abrams' book, and the intro of her book, it starts with Lean. It changed its name. It used to be called Minority Report. But she was saying, like, having to overcome the idea that I was less than to be greater than was one thing, but then having to negate the lies that my teachers told me about who I was and who I could become. Her physics teacher telling her that she'll never be good in advanced mathematics, and not allow her. Like, I imagine what Kamala must have heard externally and having to overcome that voice and overcome, and then having that support system there. Mm-hmm. I just love how non-traditional that is. Like, you would look to the woman in your life, if you were a man doing that job, to be that voice. And now it's the other way around. I want more of that.
But I feel too at this, well, I was gonna say at the same time, that's a lot of pressure to be the first. And yeah, like, I think it's gonna be the same thing that we saw with Obama, like him being the first Black president. The Black community is looking to you, and it's like, okay, what are you gonna do for us? What is change gonna look like? And like, putting all in the entire hopes and dreams of all Black people on him, on his shoulders, I can imagine that's incredibly weighty, and mm-hmm. even more so as a woman.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I was gonna ask, do you think that, how do you think that this election was different? Do you think it was majority different because we had, you know, a Black female running? Do you think that it was majority different just because people wanted to see something different for the next 4 years? You know, why do you think that this particular election was so kind of weighty for the country?
This is why I mentioned my cautious optimism. I think that it was very, very, very painfully obvious that this is a divided nation. Mm-hmm. And that is the weight. Like, whoever won that, we still have a problem that has been opened up, a wound that is completely open, mm-hmm. that needs tending to. And until that happens, until that begins to happen, we're gonna have problems. Mm-hmm. And we still have a Senate that hasn't been able to be called yet. Like, until Georgia chooses two Democratic senators, do your job, Georgia. Then we're going to have a divided Congress, and nobody can govern. And so we just got a babysitter for 4 years. The weight of that election on the future of our democracy is still in the balance, at least until January 20th, when we decide who runs Congress. And then even after that, we still got to really start to look at who we are as a nation.
I think just seeing the map, the red and blue map, it made it plain for all of America. For those mm-hmm. who don't know, this is what it looks like in color. Like,
in color.
This is what it looks like. It's a visual representation of how divided America is. And like, I think for a lot of people, that was shocking. For me, it wasn't. I don't think for any of us on this Zoom call, it was. But I think for a lot of people, it was eye-opening. And given the landscape of 2020, that just kind of sat on top of everything else that has been weighty in our nation. And it's like, you got the backdrop of Corona. COVID has been like, I saw this poll where they were polling young people to see like what was motivating them to turn out in such high numbers to participate in voting this time. And it was like coronavirus was one of the top issues. And then also like racial equity and just police brutality, all the stuff that has been bubbling up in 2022. So it's like you have these two pandemics going on, and then you have this crazy election sitting on top of it. It's like, oh my gosh, like that.
Do you feel like the election sat on top of these two pandemics, or was it illustration of the pandemics that are existing in our nation?
It was, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That map, seeing it in red and blue, like that made it clear. It was already that way. Mm-hmm. It just came out in a clearer way for those who weren't aware.
Right. I think we talked about this last season where we were going through like kind of the initial wave of the virus, and how, and even with everything that was going on with police brutality at the time, we were trying to, you know, kind of figure out why this one felt different, or why this season felt different, you know? And I think for a lot of people, it felt different because people were paying more attention.
Yeah,
it kind of forced to sit home and watch and listen and pay attention and hear. They couldn't just tune it out anymore. Mm-hmm. Like they have, because none of this is new, right? We know that. Right. This has been going on for generations. But it was different because people couldn't keep busy. Mm-hmm. So every time you went somewhere, looked somewhere, you knew it was happening because it was saturating the media, which we also know happens in an election year. Yes. So there's that piece on top of it, right? But I think that with this, it's going to be one of those things where we have to really make sure that moving forward, if this is the can that we've opened and if this is the light that we've now shined on this, what do we do with it now that it's been revealed? Right? Mm-hmm. How do we walk this out now that we've seen what's going on and we understand where the country is? What do we do next? We can't just elect a new president and a new VP and then keep it moving. Mm-mm. You know, what are going to be the next steps? And, you know, like Jazz said, that's a lot of weight to put on Biden and Harris, and it doesn't all fall on them. It can't all fall on them. So what are we going to do moving forward, and how are we going to mobilize? You know, Stacey Abrams in Georgia, like, we're waiting for them, but they've also mobilized and moved. And, you know, people are on the ground doing mm-hmm. the work that they need to do. And there has to continue to be that, because it's not like this is new. People have been doing that for years. I think we're just getting more exposure to that. And people are joining into the fight, I guess. This new generation is joining into the fight.
I think I felt like those words, even leading up to it, like on my flight, on the way back to America, when I finally decided, okay, this is the woman I want to be, it was much to that, like, the movement is happening. Like, history books will remember us in this moment, and I want to be on the right side of history, and my skin color doesn't automatically put me there. My religious beliefs don't automatically put me there. My action puts me there. Otherwise, I'll be watching my grandkids fight this fight again. And I felt like the first thing that I could do to mobilize this thing within myself was to be a worker, a poll worker in the election, to make sure that crazy crap doesn't happen, because I felt like one group, I don't even want to give their name credit, but that group, you know, the ones with the polos and the khakis and the tiki torches, I was like, they've been called to arms. Like, they heard their call go out. They ready. And so there has to be met with an equal or greater response. Sign me up. I called my election. I said, the election commissioner, St. Louis, I said, y'all need some help, because I need to be ready. I need to be at the polls and watching and making sure that things are going well and making sure that my community is registered, that they're educated, that they have the support that they need within the polling place. Because I think St. Louis did a good job. Georgia probably did a good job. A lot of these communities did a good job getting people registered and getting their mail-in ballots to them. So I felt like the next step was to make sure that once they get there, for those who are voting in person, that they still had that support to walk through. Mm-hmm. And in the community that I serve, like, there was a guy who came in who couldn't read or write. And he said to me, I just don't want 4 more years of Trump. I'm a registered independent. So I said, okay, I understand. You know, that's all I could say. And he was like, can you help me, you know, vote? And I'm like, sure, I can read you your options and help you get through this and work through that. And there was a lot of just lack of knowledge. Like, people knew that they didn't want Trump. But then you see this long ballot, all these names, mm-hmm. all of these proposals. There are about 1,000 ways to screw up a ballot. Mm-hmm. And to not have your vote counted. And who's going to tell you, hey, actually, that's not going to count today. You need to do this again. You know how many times I handed out a ballot a second, third time to the same person?
Wow.
And I had 1,200 voters in my precinct. A lot. I handed out a lot of ballots. We need election reform. We need election reform. Mm-hmm. But I guess in that vein, my question to what Delia is putting before is, like, what do you guys think that you can do personally in the days to come, in the months to come, as far as mobilizing and being active in what's happening in our nation right now? Do you feel like, and it doesn't have to be, I mean, I'm not saying, like, what you gonna do, you know? I mean, like, what
I think,
do you feel?
Well, before we even take it there, I wanted to take it back to just, like, giving people credit where credit is due. Like, in Georgia, reading about the Black women down there who went to marches with QR codes on the back of their t-shirts to register people to vote. Like, that's so creative. And I think that this election season, there was a lot of creativity. There was a lot of thought behind campaigning and not even necessarily like bipartisan campaigning, but just like in general, like bringing about awareness and education and, you know, what it means to register, what it means to vote, what it means to cast a ballot, what it means to vote down the ballot and do your homework and do your research and know who you're voting for and what office they hold. Like, I think there was a lot of effort, and just the fact that Black women are getting credit for the work that they're doing in the community on the ground. Like, I think that's really beautiful. And like I said, like, we're finally becoming the face, and that feels good.
Mm-hmm. I hate to say this or even ask this question, but I ask it anyway. Do you think if we hadn't had George Floyd and the movement and the, you know, protests in the streets prior to the election, that Black women would have gotten that credit? Do you think that had we not gone through that pre-awakening as a nation to diversity and to the existence of Black people and all of that, do you think that we would have seen those women?
Mm-hmm. Probably not.
like no. Question? No, probably not. And I also think that if COVID hadn't happened, it would have looked very different. Mm-hmm. I just think that a lot of things, it was kind of like a domino piece. Like, a lot of things had to just kind of be lined up and knocked over for stuff to happen the way that it's happened right now, you know? And I think I really do believe that it's about the illuminating of what's been going on, because it's not like this stuff hasn't been going on. It's not like police brutality is new, and it's not like Stacey Abrams just started working this year. You see what I'm saying? Like, she's been working, she's been in the trenches among so many other people. Mm-hmm. It's just, all of this is kind of, it just bubbled to a point where people were finally starting to be like, this is not okay. Mm-hmm. Wait, something's not right here. Mm-hmm. Why do I feel like this? What's going on? How mm-hmm. can I help? What can I do? You know?
Yeah.
And to your question, Candace, there's a lot that I realized that I didn't know preparing for this election. There was a lot of research that I felt like I had to do for myself to understand what was going on. When I got my mail-in ballot, there was a lot on there that I was like, I don't understand or know. And I had to, I was glad that I could take my time with it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I was glad that I could take my time to really make that informed educated decision for myself.
Yeah.
But there are so many people who don't have that chance or don't have that opportunity. So when these people are out there, like you and everybody else who is out there trying to help and support, that's what we need. But we need that more than just on the election day. We need that leading up to it so that everybody can have their rights be heard and their privileges be heard to go out there and do what they need to do, you know? And I think too, with this, and again, I'm always kind of speaking from the generation, because as a teacher, that's just kind of where my focus immediately goes. But even with my students, we had a lot of conversation about voting. We had a lot of conversation about the election. And we even had kids who said that they wanted Biden to win. We even had kids who said they didn't want Biden to win. And you can tell that some of them had really strong opinions either way. And so even just being able to have that discussion with kids and see that kids are, they're excited to vote. Mm-hmm. Like, they want to have a voice. Mm-hmm. I don't remember being 9 years old and given a flip. Like, I don't remember that being a part of my like consciousness at 9, 10 years old, but these kids are aware. And I think that if we continue that and we continue to kind of build up this desire in them to have their voice be heard and be a part of the process, that by the time they become of age to actually make change, not to say they can't do it now, but by the time they come of age to vote and kind of push that stuff through, then it's going to be a different, I'm praying that it'll be a different shift, you know, once that happens. I was really encouraged by like how much my kids were like, we can't vote, so you have to, Miss Nugent. You know what I mean? Like, that was
amazing.
It was amazing to, like, I loved that. You know, like, you got to vote for us, you know?
I think that it sounds like a cultural and a generational shift, because think back to when we were kids. You're right. I didn't give a about who was president or voting or whatever. Like, it just didn't register. It didn't apply to my everyday life.
Right.
And then two, being Black kids as a young child and you're hearing these adult conversations go on and you're hearing about politics and money and all these things, you're told, like, stay out of grown folks' business, right? Like, you're a kid, worry about kids' stuff. But if we start to normalize things like voting and civic engagement while kids are young, then they'll grow up with that. It won't ever be like this cliff that they're jumping off of, not knowing what's on the other side, you know? Like, those things will be normalized. So I think that's a practical step that we can take with our kids and with the kids that we work with to kind of get them involved at a young age and teach them that way.
Yes, to all of that.
Yeah. So how did you guys feel? I know, Candace, you were kind of on the ground on election day, but how did you guys feel kind of waiting for the results and that several day process that took and still taking?
Yeah, that was, I'll tell you, we had CNN on pretty much the whole day. And at some point I was like, okay, we have to turn this off. Like, it's just, I need a brain break. But just seeing, like I said, the red and blue map. And then at one point they had one anchor on there doing long math with a piece of paper and a pen on camera. That's about 3,000 votes right there. And hold on, let me.
For to take time, because you couldn't use the calculator.
What is happening? I was like, I can't. I was like, I'm done. I can't do this.
Oh my God.
It was just like the angst every day. I was like, I know this is not going to be a one day thing. We all know this. Like, come on.
You knew it, yeah.
But just like waking up and the numbers are still the same and they're still speculating and they're reaching for content because they have to.
And that's the same.
Blitzer on there looking like he ain't slept in days, and then
right.
He's about to fall over. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just a mess. It was, yeah, an election day to remember.
They called Missouri before I left the polls in St. Louis.
Mm. Wow.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. Just say that. Leave it right there. So that's a whole precinct that was at least one precinct that wasn't even counted yet for them to be like, oh, we know who y'all want in this state. Yeah. So I think that's why so many people feel a bit like their voices don't matter. I don't like that calling states at the 70% mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we had to wait a lot, but like get to 99%. We waited 4 days. We wait four more. Like, I don't know why Nevada was taking all day, but still, either way, I wish they hadn't done that because it really did. Like, what's the point? Like, people still, our polls were still open when they called Missouri. So then, like, if anybody checked that before going to the polls, they have no motivation to go. If the state is called opposite what they were voting for. Yeah, so there was that. That's my other issue. But I showed up and did my job regardless.
Yes, you did. And I'm sure there were a lot of people that were really appreciative of you being able to help them out.
Mm-hmm. So, it was a good day.
That was good. So then when we got the news and it came across, what was that? All I know is my phone was blown up. FaceTimes was happening. Video calls was happening. Aunties was crying. Like, it was
when Obama got elected.
Yeah, it's funny because after all those days in front of the TV watching CNN, I was out when it happened. I was at the park,
right? He was like, ain't nothing gonna happen, let me go do something. And that's when it come out. That's happened to me.
I was at the park enjoying myself. My brother picks up his phone. He's like, oh, Biden won. I said, what? I missed the it happened finally. Like, yeah. So that we kind of celebrated in the park, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I can't, like, hearing that people were surprised that it was such a close race, I was not at all. Like, if Trump would have won, I would not have been surprised. Like, it's just, that's the state of our nation right now.
Right.
So yeah, but hearing that he won was a sense of relief, like, okay. But at the same time, it's like all of our hopes and dreams cannot be centered on these two people. Like, it just, life doesn't work that way.
not even half of them, maybe not even 20%. I feel like Biden is the boyfriend we need when we getting out of a bad relationship. He's not the one, but he's the one that's going to get you through until you meet the one, because since we have to be in a relationship, like, okay, healthy-wise, we should not be in a relationship.
Biden is the rebound?
He's the freaking rebound, and don't act like you don't know it. You know he is. So I'm looking forward to 2024. Like, let's see who's running. I'm excited to see. But Biden may not be the one we want, but he's the one we need. And he's the one we need right now. We need somebody boring, calm, soothing. You don't need nothing special. Don't try to change nothing. You're going to add a little bit to healthcare. Great. But, you know, we don't need too much. We need time. We need to heal. We need some let alone. Give us a chamomile tea, and Biden is the chamomile tea we needed after being on crack cocaine for 4 years.
Oh my gosh.
That's how I feel.
Bruh.
Mercy.
That's hilarious.
He's either our rehab or our rebound. He's our re-something. But not maybe. Maybe not first choice.
That's real, though. I think that it will be like a deep breath, hopefully, mm-hmm. that I feel like we can take as a collective and figure out what next steps are.
I think that's a global deep breath too. Can you imagine, like, so many other heads of states were like, oh, congratulations, now we can work together. Canada is like, oh, yay, we can be the partners we were always meant to be. I was like, Trudeau, you've been going through it too, ain't you, Trudeau? I'm so sorry. Parents like, y'all coming back to the court or no? Like,
I saw that Christiane Amanpour was going through tweets.
Yep. Everybody said, we're not gonna judge you for the one that came before you. We can start afresh.
That was so funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, we have a lot to look forward to for the next 4 years and beyond. I think we're feeling somewhat hopeful that things will begin to kind of progress and move. So we hope that you guys stay tuned. We also have a nice packed season 3 for you guys. So stay tuned.
Lively.
You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on all places that have podcasts available. Please join. Please comment. Please subscribe. Share. Send us your questions. We'd love to hear from you. Send us your thoughts. We'd love to talk to you. Thank you guys for supporting us. We love you so much, and we will see you in our next episode.